Before we get to it, we're going to talk about the difference between unenforceable and overbroad, and in between, we're going to talk about how employee rating provisions are now being treated by the courts, and it'll make sense as to why it's in that order. So starting out at the front, unenforceable versus overbroad. This is from Section 1550A of the Texas Business and Commerce Code. It is the Covenants Not to Compete Act, and it is the exclusive standard for the enforceability of covenants not to compete in the state of Texas. Other states may or may not have a statute. A lot of people do this by common law. I will say statutes are becoming more common. In fact, we're even starting to see local ordinances crop up trying to address competition, and so this is an area where legislatures are active at the moment. But this is 1550. What it says is you can kind of break it into two parts. The first part says a covenant not to compete is enforceable if it is ancillary to or a part of an otherwise enforceable agreement at the time the agreement is made. That's the first statement. If you have operated in this space, what you know is between the years of 1990 and about 2006, no court analysis went past that first sentence. And I'm not going to torture you with the very technical way they got there. It starts with a Texas Supreme Court case called Light versus Sintel. And it's in the paper, and it's detailed at length. The very short version is, by the time you get to the early 2000s, there is an Austin Court of Appeals decision that literally says the following thing. If you have a perfect covenant with an at-will employee, and they sign it, unless at the moment they sign it, you also hand them the trade secrets the covenant is protecting, the covenant is unenforceable. Giving them the trade secrets later that same day after they sign it is not enough. And so this statute got to this bizarre, super technical state that meant courts in Texas just struck down non-competes. It was just dead, 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 dead. That all changed when the Texas Supreme Court issued a decision in a case called Sheshnoff. And what Sheshnoff said is, that's silly and ridiculous, and we don't know why we did it. It was a different court. That's why they did it. They pretend like it's always the same Texas Supreme Court. It's totally different people. And we've now decided that what we really want to do is emphasize the second part, reasonableness. Now, that's the first decision. If you go through the paper, it takes about four Supreme Court decisions to fully undo Light versus Sintel. It's slow. They take it apart a piece at a time. By the time you get to now, if your covenant not to compete is sitting in an agreement that is otherwise enforceable, which, by the way, executory contracts are ones that don't actually impose any obligation on me. They only impose an obligation on you that kicks in when I choose to perform. So, for example, if I say, you promise not to disclose any of my confidential information without promising to give you any, that's executory. I don't actually have any obligation. You're at will. I could fire you the second after you wrote the contract. But if I choose to employ you and give you confidential information, the second I do that, your obligation to keep it confidential kicks in. And the court becomes comfortable with that. It says that works and that's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. If there's some nexus between that agreement, and this comes out of a case called Haas, or I'm sorry, this is Marsh. Haas is way earlier. In Marsh, it's a stock option agreement. And what the court says is a stock option agreement aligns an employee's interest with those of the shareholder with respect to the company's goodwill and value. Ergo, there is a connection between that transaction and wanting to keep them from competing because competing will reduce the value. In other words, lawyers being creative and finding a connection between a stock option agreement and a non-compete. The net of all this is, as long as you're putting these agreements in actual agreements, like this is not written on the back of a napkin and sprung on the employee on the last day of employment, it's an actual agreement, what the court is now saying is you're probably going to clear the first part of this sentence in all likelihood. And again, there's a very detailed accounting of this in the paper. But that's going to leave us with the second part. We're only going to enforce it to the extent it is reasonable. And there are three components. There's three ways we look at that. Time, geography, scope. Time, there are old cases that say 2 to 5 years is reasonable for a covenant not to compete. Yeah, the one guy just reacted. He's like, nope, I agree with you. A judge in this town will not be happy with you if you try to get a 5-year non-compete enforced against somebody. That's outrageous. And by the way, I'm on tape saying that. And so I am not ever going to try it. I am not ever going to try it. You are free to play this tape back. If I'm standing in the courtroom arguing against you that 5 years outside of a transaction, if I bought your company, 5 years makes sense. But you just worked for me. You just worked for me. It's fine. You can play the tape back.
Cybersecurity risk.
I mean it. Like, I commit to this. 2 years, it's a little aggressive, but maybe, depending on what we're talking about. 1 year is super common. and is what judges are used to seeing. I've seen a few six-month non-competes. Six-month non-competes are interesting for a very particular reason. People tend to comply with them. If I really want your person, I'll bench them for 6 months. I'll park them in a different role for 6 months. Hell, it's going to take them to 6 months to figure out where the cafeteria and everything else is. I'll just train them for 6 months. I'm not going to have them do anything. So a six-month non-compete is curious in that it is probably going to be complied with. Like, I don't even have to sue. I'll probably just get you to do it. 1 year is what we tend to fight over. 2 years is often seen as a negotiating position to get to 1 year. But that sometimes you actually need 2 years. It is a true thing. Okay, that's time. Geographical area has gotten super, 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 super weird because remote work. Like, this was already going on before COVID, and then COVID just, you know, sent everybody the four winds. We have clients calling us going, what do we do if we found out that our employee is now in location? Because that happens, and it turns out people move and don't tell you anymore. Okay, well, that makes the geography a little tough, because the way courts are used to thinking about it is a geographic area that is bounded by where you worked. So if I worked in Austin, I won't compete in Austin and maybe the surrounding counties. Sure, if what I do is something you need to drive to. So if it's like a dentist's office, that makes perfect sense because people aren't going to drive further than that to get their teeth cleaned. But most jobs I could actually probably effectively perform from anywhere.